Hack the Entrepreneur is part of Rainmaker FM, the digital business podcast network. Find more great shows and education at rainmaker.fm. Hack number 8, be a painkiller, not a vitamin. Every company needs to solve a problem which you can compare to the function of a painkiller as opposed to a vitamin. When we have a toothache, we want a painkiller, not a vitamin, and we're willing to pay for it. Matt Berry, founder and CEO of Freelancer.com. Get this hack along with 49 others in Hack the Entrepreneur, the book, on Amazon right now.
Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. It is so very cool of you to join me again today. Today's episode goes a tiny bit longer than usual, but I think you're going to love it. Let's do it. I'm your host, John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. My guest today is an author, former actor, professional speaker, and an entrepreneur. My guest is currently the founder of Book Yourself Solid and Heroic Public Speaking. Through these businesses, he has lectured, trained, inspired, and provided coaching and consulting services to over 20,000 business owners in the last 2 years alone. He has written 6 books, including Book Yourself Solid, Steal the Show, and the New York Times bestseller, The Think Big Manifesto. Now, let's hack Michael Port. I want to take a moment to thank today's sponsor, GoToWebinar. When you are trying to create demand for your business, you need a cost-effective way to reach your target audience and generate qualified leads for your sales team. With GoToWebinar, you can present to hundreds with confidence. Whether you are a startup or a company operating worldwide, GoToWebinar can help you connect, captivate, and convert your target audience. Pick a compelling topic, select your audience, and schedule your event. With automated emails, custom branding, and practice sessions, GoToWebinar makes getting ready easy. When your event is live, keep attendees engaged with interactive polls, live chat, and you can respond to feedback in real time. And once your event is over, you're only a click away from reporting on registration, attendance, and performance metrics of your event. GoToWebinar enables marketers like you to easily reach your target audience and turn leads into customers. Get started with GoToWebinar today to connect and convert. Visit GoToWebinar.com to start your 30-day free trial. That's GoToWebinar.com. We are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur, and today we have a very, very special guest. Michael, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
I think this is going to be a blast.
I hope so. Am I a special guest, or am I more special?
Less? You're definitely more special.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I feel lucky. Thank you.
Don't let us down, Michael.
Okay, I'll do my best.
All right, let's jump into this. Michael, as an entrepreneur, can you tell me, what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
I would say that I have an incredible sense of urgency. So I feel that I can do more in a month than many people can do all year. And it's not that my project management skills are that much better. I don't work around the clock, but when I want to make something happen, I turn into a bit of a force of nature. I don't blow anybody over, but I hire people that have the same kind of urgency. I collaborate with people that have the same kind of urgency. And I think that makes a big difference. And I did that, you know, way back before I was working on my own, when I was in the fitness industry running health clubs, I worked to hire people who had that same sense of urgency. And it was just natural for them to have it. It wasn't something that they put on when they came to the office. There are just certain people that when they want to do something or when they're supposed to do something, they do it and they love doing it and they want to get it done and they don't want it hanging over their heads. So that sense of urgency is very important to me.
I love it. I've never heard it described as a sense of urgency. I mean, it seems almost interchangeable with the quote unquote hustle, from like the Gary Vaynerchuk school of thought?
Yeah, the hustle is like it's the term du jour. You know, in this industry, we go in phases, you know, like before hustle, it was life hacking. And then before, you know, it's like, so we're always moving through different phases. I think it's cool. I got no problem with it. But I think there's something to it. I think when people think about hustle, however, I think there can be a negative connotation. When I was a kid and they said, you know, you hustle on the field. Well, that was good, you know, but a hustler is usually somebody who tricks you and takes your money. So hustle is definitely good, but I also think it makes people nervous because it's like the shucking and jiving and like, hey, I'm going to hustle up some business right now. And, you know, I'm going to do whatever it takes to get it done. But there's an underbelly to it. It can't be. These are all semantics, and the way you define words influences the way you think about them. So the way that I think about a particular word is influenced simply by my particular perspective on the semantics of the word. So for me, the urgency, you know, is a little bit different than that. Urgency has also its dark side. You know, sometimes I'll go too fast and, you know, my attorney will hand me a contract and I'll skim it over with my eyes. Hey, it's fine. Meanwhile, I miss that there was a huge clause in there that should not have been in there. I can't see a typo if it's screaming, blinking red and punching me in the face. I don't sort of take the time to read every single letter that's in a word. I can go very quickly through it. And sometimes I can make overly spontaneous decisions. So, you know, patience has never been something that I've been accused of having. And it's a very good quality. And so I've been working, as I've gotten older, at being more reflective rather than thinking about it as having patience, because I don't know, that just never really worked for me. But thinking more than I normally do about the various decisions that I make is something that I've gotten better at over time. And I just have to watch it. I just have to be careful to take time in between when information comes to me and when I make a decision on it, rather than making it really, really quickly. Because every once in a while, I'll make a decision and I'll say something to, say, my partner. And then a week later, I say something completely different. She says, but last week you said this. I'm like, no, I wouldn't have said that. Doesn't make any sense. And, you know, then I go, okay, well, I don't remember what I said, but this is how I feel now.
But you could sort of put that under the umbrella of growth and change.
Yes, you're very kind. Thank you. That's how I'm position it now. Actually, I've grown and changed and I'm well aware, you know. But, so there's
that's,
you know,
the old me from last
there's
week.
Pluses and minuses, and certainly I think, you know, there's other things that I would attribute my progression over the years to, you know, not just the sense of urgency, but you asked for one, so I think that's the really very, I think that's a prominent one,
and I think that one's really, really essential. And I think I really enjoy it. I love the slight yet very distinct difference between hustle. And in there, you mentioned back before you were on your own and you were working in the fitness industry. So I'd love it if we could go back, Michael.
Sure.
Because there seems to be, at least looking backwards, maybe not when we go through it, but looking back, there seems to be this time where we can define in every entrepreneur's life when they realize one of two things, that either they had this calling to make this huge difference in the world, or, as mostly seems to be the case, they find that they're just simply unemployable and cannot work for somebody else anymore.
Yeah.
So I'd love to know which side of the fence you see yourself on, and if you could take us back to when that happened for you.
Well, I definitely think that the latter was the impetus for going out on my own. You know, with that said, I care deeply about the work that I do and the effect that I hope to have on people. You know, if not, I would have gone to Wall Street or something. You know, I would have done something entirely different. I would have probably started a company putting pipes in the ground, you know, because I saw an opportunity business-wise. So I chose this particular line of work because it's about connecting and service so that you know, as I stand in the service of others, I'm also standing in the service of my destiny. So those two things go hand in hand. And I think that that's very, very important, because if it's just about service and just about going out and changing the world, and there isn't a driver for you personally in terms of what you're trying to create for yourself, you know, then it sometimes gets a little bit amorphous, or, you know, just extra touchy-feely without actually producing. And then if it's all about you and you're not trying to make a difference and actually helping people, well, then you're not that appealing to folks, and not too many people want to help you. So I think it's the balance between those two things. But I started as an actor. That was my first career.
Wow.
I went to Tulane for undergrad, and then I went to the graduate acting program at NYU, and I spent 3 years getting my master's there. And then I worked, and I was on shows like Sex and the City and Third Watch, All My Children, Law and Order. I was in 100 Center Street was also another show I was in. I was in films like The Pelican Brief, Down to Earth, The Believer, Last Call, a lot of commercials. I used to be one of the How You Doing guys for Budweiser. I don't know, it depends on your audience's age, but there was a whole series of commercials where these guys would drink Budweisers, and they'd call each other up and they go, "What's up?" You know? And that was like their thing, and it was very funny.
It was.
And then they did spinoffs. And the spinoff that I was part of, we did about 8 or 10 commercials, were the Jersey guys. And we all were like mafia kind of looking guys. And all we would say is, "How you doing? How you doing? How you doing? How you doing?" That's it. The funny thing is, when we all went in at first, each one of us had our own "how you doing." Like one guy was like, "How you doing?" Another guy's like, "How you doing?" You know, and then the director was like, no. Everyone exactly the same. That's what makes it funny. And he was 100% right. So then I did a lot of voiceovers. Voiceovers was my bread and butter. I did 1-800-CALL-ATT. Did that one. Well, they should actually pay you for that sponsorship, I think.
Right there.
Yeah. I did Coors Beer, Pizza Hut, MTV. I did it. You know, remember the MTV's Rock and Jock Super Bowl.
Wow.
So I did a lot of that kind of stuff. And I really loved performing. I didn't like the rejection. I was not good at rejection at that stage in my life. I can't say I'm great at it now, but I think I'm much better at it. But at that stage, I wanted more approval than I was getting. And I wanted to make more money faster than I was making. And I wanted to work more than I was working. And I just had this sense of urgency. So you see how, on one hand, the urgency was very helpful. But on the other hand, you had to wait around a lot in that industry. Even when you're working on set, you sit around all day, mm-hmm. just waiting around. I'm just not good at waiting around. I would show up for auditions an hour and a half early. So let's say I had a 10 o'clock audition. I'd show up at 8:30, and yeah, they were running maybe a couple minutes late. Let's say they call me at 8:10. And by 8:10, I'm pissed off that they're late because I've been sitting there for an hour and 40 minutes, but really they're only 10 minutes late, which is completely acceptable and actually quite good in audition. So I left, and that was the point where I thought, well, if I go into business, maybe I'll have a little bit more control. And I am one of those people who has the ability to do lots of different things. I've just always been that way. I was never academic, and I can barely spell my own name. I'm dyslexic. I mean, I can't spell my name. I'm dyslexic. The other day I was confused. I thought Hawaii wasn't a state. I thought it was still a territory. So like, I'm not the guy who reads a textbook and remembers it, but I always felt capable. Like I could do things if I wanted to do them. So I thought, okay, I'll go into business and I'll figure that out. And I did. And I did pretty well. And I moved up the corporate ladder in the industries that I was in. And I spent about 4 years on the business side in the fitness industry. But, you know, I couldn't make any real money unless I was on the owner side. And I didn't really know what I wanted to do owner side wise. And I didn't want to start any clubs because it's huge financial investment and it's all brick and mortar. And I didn't want that kind of business where I was I was nailed down. I wanted more flexibility, more freedom. And that's when I started going out and coaching. And I really, when I started doing it, I had no target market. I didn't have a particular area of specialty. I just thought like, listen, I'm, you know, really good at helping people see what they're capable of. That was something that I knew I was good at. I was introspective, and I was very aware of how the world worked. But, you know, I didn't know what else I was doing. And so I very quickly realized that I needed to get smart about this and choose a target market, identify a very clear result that I could produce for them, put together a protocol that would be something that I could work them through, because people don't really like to buy conversations. They like to buy protocol. They start here, they go here, they finish here. And at the end of that, they've produced something. And that was really where things changed for me. And then I wrote my first book, and I wrote it in 2005, came out in 2006. That was Book Yourself Solid. And that book just exploded. I did one of those campaigns at the beginning. I mean, there was no social media then. It was just, you know, Amazon. And I hit number two on all of Amazon. Wow. In 2 hours after we launched the campaign. It was a little bit of a different world then. There wasn't as much noise. There weren't as many channels. And you really needed to be publishing through a trade publisher to have any credibility at that time. Self-publishing isn't what it is. It wasn't what it is now. And so my friends, we would all promote for each other via email, which is very hard to get people to do now, even if they're close friends, because email has so much more value. And there's other ways people can promote for you, so they just put it out in the social channels, but it doesn't have the same kind of impact. And so at 9 o'clock in the morning, I had about 20 people all send an email out at the same time. And because of the volume of people so quickly, everybody getting this email at the same time and everybody buying at the same time, the book shot up to number two. The only book that was ahead of it was a Dr. Oz book.
Oh, geez.
And he was on Oprah the whole week. So that was a little tough to compete with. But because it got up there to number two, it stayed there. Because, you know, once something's a hit, it stays a hit if it's good.
Yeah.
If it's not, it'll trickle out over time. But fortunately, it appealed to people, because there's a really meaningful philosophy that runs through the whole book. You know, I wrote that original book for people who don't typically love marketing and selling. But I believe that there are certain people you're meant to serve and others that you're not. And your job is to do everything in your power to reach the people that you're meant to serve. So that ultimately what happens is you start to develop this love affair between, you know, you and your clients, not in a weird way. Well, some people do in a weird way, but for the most, that's not what I was writing about. But you also then fall in love with self-promotion, because you realize that you're just doing everything you can to reach the people that you're meant to serve. So I don't worry too much about approval these days. You know, if I worried about approval, I wouldn't talk about my dyslexia, and I wouldn't talk about that I was confused about Hawaii not being a state. When I started my business, there's no way I would have said that publicly. No way. I would have been embarrassed. I would have not said anything about, you know, because I wanted people to think I was really smart. You know, I wanted them to think that I really knew what I was talking about. And of course, as you start to build up some more credibility and you have some accomplishments under your belt, you tend to be less worried about that, because, you know, you've earned a place in the space, so to speak. But also because I know that stuff is not what matters. It's what you do on a daily basis to be of service and helpful to other people is that what makes the difference, because you can't be good at something. You can only be helpful. And I think that's really important. You can develop skills in an area, but those skills translate into you being able to help people by getting your message across. So for example, I wrote in Steal the Show, which is my latest book. I wrote about a client who called me up freaking out because she got an opportunity to be interviewed on one of the morning broadcast network TV shows. And she'd been fighting to get this. I mean, for months she wanted to get this. And this was the biggest opportunity she'd ever had. But now she got it. She's freaking out. I can't do it. I don't know what I'm thinking. I'm going to suck. Michael, what can I do to be good? That's what she wanted to know. I said, you can't be good. It's not possible. And I think she fell off her chair. Because what she thought I meant was that she's not good. And I said, no, it's not that you're not good. But you can't go into that kind of situation trying to be good, because then you'll be stiff and you'll second guess yourself and you'll pander and you'll try to say the right thing and you'll be anxious throughout. All you can do is go in there and be helpful. And if you know your material and if you've done your homework, if you've prepared, then if you go in there and try to be helpful by answering the questions in a way that helps the audience, and you use the skills that I've taught you from a performing perspective, well, then you're going to be helpful. They're going to think you're great. They're going to think you're fantastic because you delivered on a promise. You produced a result for them. And that's what people ultimately care about. So that's what I try to focus on now.
I love that. You can't be good. You can only be helpful.
Yeah. I mean,
that summarizes it so well.
Yeah. I mean, look, people will say, oh, he's so good, you know, but they're saying that in large part because you're really helpful.
Because you help them.
That's, you know, that's, and ultimately if you're in business, that's, you know, that's your job. You know, your product should in some way help people.
Yeah. It's not about you.
No, it's never about you. That's the thing. And look, in the industry that I'm in, where you write books and you speak and you get like C-level famous, you know, like there's A-listers, then there's B-listers, and then there's C or even D-listers. But because, you know, people talk about what they said, someone said to me, well, what's it like to be famous? I'm like, are you kidding? You know, you mean like in my industry, you know, because famous is Brad Pitt. That's famous. You know,
Yeah. The
president, that's famous. Those of us that write books, even if we're writing, you know, New York Times bestsellers and Wall Street Journal bestsellers, and you know, we're well known in our industry, doesn't mean that we're actually famous.
Yeah, we also some.
Although
also,
people still recognize me from Sex and the City, which is hysterical because that was 1997 and I had a full head of hair.
Crazy.
That show is so popular that it keeps playing. So you know, I was on an airplane. Stewardess comes up to me. She goes, "I just have to ask you a question." I said, "What?" You know, she's whispering. I figured I had to whisper. She goes, "Were you on Sex and the City?" I said, "I was." She goes, "Oh my God, I have to tell everybody." And she ran to the back.
That's pretty awesome. That's got to make you smile.
It's fun. Yeah, of course it's fun, but Yeah. It's not significant. That's the thing. I think Right. That's one of the things that you realize when you're in a field that gets a lot of attention. And, you know, we often, you know, put people on pedestals because sometimes it helps motivate us because we look up to them and we feel that they're living at a higher plane and they drive us to live there too. And I think that's really interesting. And then of course, we like to knock them down and then we say, oh, well, see, they were really not that great. That's why I'm still where I am now, because that's fine. You know, we make justifications for our behavior all the time. But my point is, when you're in an industry, and I've been in a number of industries that have that kind of component in it, you recognize very quickly how false it is and how insipid sort of celebrity or fame is. And you recognize that one of the reasons that a lot of people who are in entertainment, who get very, very famous, have a lot of trouble with it and often self-destruct after a while is because it's not real. Mm. You know, when people are going nuts over you, it's not a real thing. But if they like your work, well, that makes sense. But often fame has nothing to do with the work. So I'm interested in the work. I want people to get value from the work. And I don't want it to in any way be about me.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you stories about me because they're funny and they can be helpful.
Exactly.
You know, but that's the thing is like, you know, you only have your life to use when teaching. I mean, you can give Right. Examples of other people and students and other experiences you've had or other experiences other people have had, of course, but you know, your life and the way you've lived it. And this is not just for people who teach, but for everybody is a very important teaching tool. And we're teaching our kids in large part based on the lessons we've learned. And so that's how we all teach.
Yeah, that's smart. All right, Michael, your one thing is your incredible sense of urgency. Now, all the experts talk about the 80-20 rule. So you're supposed to do 20% of the work and you'll get 80% of the results. Within your business, you're only supposed to do what you're good at. And you're supposed to delegate the rest. Michael, could you tell me something that you are absolutely not good at in your business?
How long do you have? Well, first of all, as I mentioned earlier, I cannot write something without typos. It's just impossible. It's just not going to happen. So I've given up on trying to, you know, proofread anything that I write. So that's one thing. It's a simple thing, but it's very important that I always get that help. Number two, I am much more creative and interested in ideation than I am at crunching numbers. So I have to create constraints. And I think this is important. I do this around, you know, my writing as well. So I don't send out things with too many typos. Although my email signature line does say, P.S., I don't charge for typos. They're just my gift to you. So they do still show up there, but I put in constraints. So my bookkeeper's job is to go over the P&L with me every 2 weeks. And if I don't answer an email when she sends it to me, or I don't schedule a time to talk to her, her job is to track me down. And if she doesn't track me down, then she gets fired. That's the way it works. She knows that that's her job description. I'm never going to get mad at her because she's pestering me to do it. That's what I want her to do. And so I put in a lot of constraints like that in the business so that I'm forced to do the things that I need to do, because this I'm of the mind that, you know, that we should be very, very forthcoming about what it takes to be successful as an entrepreneur. And I think most would agree, if they were honest, that there's lots of things that you'll need to do that will change over time, but there's lots of things that you'll need to do that you don't really want to do. So a famous actor probably doesn't want to do the press junkets, because you sit there for like 3 days in a chair and you have 3 minutes with every single reporter in the entire industry, and you have to say the same thing over and over again. They don't want to do that, but they do it because it's part of their job. And they know they're getting $20 million a film. It's not a big deal for them to sit there for a couple of days. So there's lots of things that we do that we don't want to do that can't be delegated. But you can create constraints that force you to do it, so you do it well. And then, of course, you can delegate too, but don't abdicate. That's the mistake. Abdication is really, really dangerous. So delegation means we're still involved in managing it and measuring it, et cetera. But abdication means we just ignore it. We just give it to somebody else. And that's when we get into trouble. So when it comes to the P&Ls and the balance sheet and all of that stuff, my wife, who's also one of my business partners, she was my business partner first, she now goes over the P&L because she's a math whiz. And of course, I trust her implicitly and explicitly. But I also still look at it with her. But I want her to do the more detail-oriented work with the bookkeeper, with respect to making sure everything's categorized properly, all expenses are attributed to the different products and programs, because we have so many different initiatives going on at one time, and there's a lot to juggle there. But this way, it forces us to get the things done that need to be done.
Yeah, and I like the idea. I mean, you've mentioned it earlier on, and it's very obvious listening to your like introspective sort of nature, how you do have this ability to sort of look within and kind of figure out your weaknesses and your strengths and then play to those, not use them as something. Most people, I mean, listening are probably growing up and stuff, and they think that, ooh, I have typos. I don't know grammar properly. Obviously, I'll never write 6 best-selling books.
Well, let me tell you something.
But then there's you.
You could barely get me to write a 5-paragraph essay in high school. Yeah, you know.
And now look at you.
And now look at me. Because I have something to say, and I have an expertise in, you know,
and that's more important.
And that's more important. And I also realized when I first started writing, I was terrible because I was trying to write like my father, who's an academic. He's a doctor. And my father sends me emails every day. And they're usually include an attachment of some article that he read. So instead of just one or two lines about it, I'll get 19 paragraphs. And the exquisite detail that he pays to his write-up is extraordinary. And I don't know how he has time to do it, because he's seeing patients from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. every day. And it's really remarkable to me. So I read about 1/10 of what he said to me. I told him I'm saving everything so that when you pass away, I'll be able to go back and read everything to keep remembering you, et cetera, et cetera. He's like, okay, that's good. That's good. So that'll be his legacy, all these articles and letters that he sent me. So what was my point? Oh, yeah. So my point is that that's just not how I write. It's not me. It's not my style. And I started writing the way that I spoke. And I realized I'm not bad at writing copy. I would never have been a great copywriter for hire. That wouldn't have been my thing. But I could write my own copy. And I understand what works in copy. So that's how I started before I wrote books. I have to write my own copy. And I realized that all I was doing is trying to make a case to somebody. That's what copywriting is about. I said, well, I have a goal. I want to try to get them to understand this. You know, what can I do to do that? And if I wrote in my own voice, the way that I spoke to people, it didn't matter if it was on paper or if it was coming out of my mouth, you know, I would be okay. And I did, I tried it and I kept doing it and I got better and better. And if I looked it back at something I wrote now in 2003, I probably have a good laugh. But when I look back at my writing of my first book, it was very good because it was really right for my audience. And that's what's important. So as I said earlier, there's certain people you're meant to serve and others that you're not. And our job is to reach the people we're meant to serve. So I'm not writing for, you know, math professors at MIT. I'm writing for people more like me. And one of the things that's very interesting is that my dyslexia has actually helped me be a better teacher and communicator, surprisingly. Here's why. When you're dyslexic, often the way that information is presented to you by others doesn't make sense. So if you care about learning something, you've got to go and figure out how it works on your own. Now, you might be able to pull a little bit from what one person said, a little bit from what somebody else said, a little bit from what you read, a little bit from what you saw in a video, but then you have to organize it in a way that you can consume. And that's exactly what I do in my books and my teaching. So for example, Book Yourself Solid, my first book, people often comment, they say, you know, a lot of the things that you were talking about in there, I'd heard before, but the way that you organized it made it so much easier to understand how it all fit together. So that is really become, I think, my killer app. And I can learn quickly as a result. It just, I can't always learn the way other people want me to learn. I have to figure it out myself and then reorganize it, re-engineer it in a way that's more consumable. And your ideas are really only as good as other people's ability to consume them.
Yeah.
So if you can't get them to consume what you're thinking about and then do something with it, even if you have the best ideas in the world, doesn't matter. So that's what's really helped. So there was a study done by the Kauffman Foundation, actually, about dyslexia and entrepreneurship. And they found that a significantly larger percentage of people with dyslexia are entrepreneurs compared to the general population. And they posited a few reasons why. Number one, they felt that people who are dyslexic often don't fit well in the corporate world, again, because it's somebody else's structure and they don't really work that way. So they're not super comfortable in that environment. Number two, they tend to be good verbal communicators. They need to develop that skill early. Number three, they tend to be very good at getting other people to do their work for them, which is what entrepreneurship is about. Otherwise, you're just creating a job for yourself.
Wow, it is.
So you've got to be the kind of person that others want to help. So for example, when I was in school, I still can't do it, but I can't take notes and listen at the same time. If I have a phone conversation and I take notes while I'm talking, you would look at the notes afterwards and you would think it was just like a pen on a robot that was scratching around. You would go, what is that? I don't even know what I wrote. I have no idea what that is. So I have to have my assistant on the phone taking notes very often when it's an important conversation. And so in order not to be just some dumb guy who didn't do his homework, and nobody wants to give that guy their notes, I had to be the kind of person that others would want to help. And I've thought about that over the years a lot. Like, what does it take to be the kind of person that others want to help? What do you have to do? How do you have to behave? How do you need to think, etc.? And as a result, you know, that has worked well, I think, to my advantage. So my father actually was telling me he has a patient who is dyslexic, who runs a $200 million construction company, who can barely read. And the guy was telling him, said, listen, I can look around the room and I can tell you exactly where every joist and, you know, blah, 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 blah is and how far those nails are apart. You know, he's like, but I can't read very well. So, you know, he had different skills. So the point is that if you are someone who has been labeled in some way, whether it's dyslexia or something else, you know, that label may be a label that seems like a disadvantage in a very typical status quo oriented, rigidly structured environment. But it, in fact, it might be something that's helpful to you in other ways, in other spaces, in other types of professions or industries.
I love it. It's such a great mindset shift. And so, yeah, so well said. So back in the conversation when you mentioned your wife as one of your business partners, and you mentioned all of these initiatives that you have, I'm going to take those as like projects and new sort of endeavors you go into. So I would love to know right now, Michael, as somebody who you said early on too, that you kind of almost that you like can get this like gut instinct and just want to run with things really quickly. And you're learning to hold yourself back, but you probably come up with ideas or ideas come across your desk or you hear about them at a conference or directions that you could head, new initiatives that you could take on within you or your company. I'd love to know if it's a internal sort of process you go through or if it's like a written process within your business now. But I'd love to know how you decide right now what is the next project that you should put your time, energy, and resources into.
Yeah, just flip a coin. I don't know. Let's do this. No. Yeah, we do. We do take it very seriously because we have a limited amount of resources, a human, financial, and we have to be very aware of the fact that any decision we make has significant implications across both of my companies. And the ripple effect, the unintended consequences of the different product or program decisions we make can be significant. And sometimes you don't realize how significant until it's too late. So I have two separate entities. One is focused on the Book Yourself Solid brand, and the other is focused on the Heroic Public Speaking brand. And I have staff who work on both of those businesses because what they do is applicable to things that need to be done to both sides of the businesses. They just split their time according to what needs to get done. But sometimes the two businesses are competing for attention from the various players. And that's something that we're working on trying to balance. But at this stage, you know, I've been doing this since 2003. And at this stage of the process, I'm pretty clear about how I want to live my life. So I'm not just running from one thing to the next, trying to make everything that I do bigger and bigger and, you know, make more money and, you know, that kind of thing. I'm pretty clear about how I want to live my life and what my goals are and how much money I need to save for retirement to live the particular lifestyle that I'd like to live, et cetera. And the choices that I make in the business reflect that lifestyle and reflect how many more years I want to work and reflect how much I need to retire and reflect the fact that I have three children now. I had one. I went to three when I got remarried. That's a lot more. That's three kids. And I have, you know, financial responsibility, not legally, but in all practical, applications or purposes, I do. And, you know, these are the decisions I make. So I don't want to travel very much. Well, that is going to influence the decisions we make about what I do. Like at the, you know, I didn't want to become just a professional speaker, even though that was my probably greatest talent going into this business was performing, you know, coming from acting. But I didn't want to be on planes all the time. It wasn't the lifestyle that I wanted to live. I'm a boater. I want to be on the water all the time. I want to be in my boat all the time. So I knew that wasn't for me. So I said, well, I got to build the business in such a way that I have some more flexibility. So the decisions we make are influenced by that. And now I know what our schedule looks like for the whole year and where we want to go, what we want to do. And this is my family. So when we're choosing our offerings, all of the, you know, we're considering what we have on the schedule, what we want to be doing, when we want to be doing it, all of those things. So for example, next year we're taking our boat to Florida. We have a 59-foot boat.
Nice.
And we're, yeah, it's the It's, I'd say the love of my life, but Amy's the love of my life, and the boat comes close second. And you don't ever ask like a obsessed boater, you know, which they'd give up. You know that whole thing? No, I'm just kidding. I'm a very lucky man. So we're going to bring it to Florida. And oh, she just walked in. Actually, I heard the door open. So we're going to bring it to Florida. And that means that we'd like to be there as much as possible. So given that we need to do events a number of times a year, we'll just put them all in Florida. And then this way we can go stay in the boat, do the events in Florida. And we have a big conference that we do called Heroic Public Speaking Live. And that actually is coming up in February. But for next year, we're right now negotiating with the venue to do it in October. And that is because we want to be able to do our graduate program, which starts right afterwards, in the 4 months that follow, so that by the time we get to the spring and summer, we don't have that obligation anymore. The way it is now, we start in March for the graduate program. So it's March, April, May, and June. So we go into June for that, which puts our video program, we have a Done For You video program, that puts that in July. So it starts to eat up into the summer months. So we are rearranging because of that. So there's a lot of things that come across my desk that just don't fit into, you know, our lifestyle, or they're good ideas and they would fit into the lifestyle, but they just can't. But the person who's bringing the idea to me, or if it's me coming up with the idea, they're not able to prove that it'll work better than what we have now. And I don't consider it. I'm not after the shiny object. Mm-hmm. Because so for someone pitched me this idea, they want to do this collaboration with me. And it's a great idea. It's something that I know works because I've seen it work in the industry. I know it's something that my students would buy. And I know it's something that would be helpful for them. So all of that, you know, is a check, 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 check. But for me, it's not profitable enough to make it worthwhile when there are other things that we could be doing that are more profitable. So that's a very simple equation. But if she could come, the person who's pitching it to me, if she could prove to me that it would be more profitable, and she doesn't know what else I'm doing, she's just got to prove she's got to demonstrate how profitable that can be. And then I, of course, look at, you know, our other ventures, and I know where the profit margins are. Then I might consider it a little more seriously. But at this point, without knowing that will make us more money than what we're doing now. We just keep doing what we're doing now.
Yeah. I mean, that's, yeah. So I love the idea of sort of lifestyle planning, only doing the things you want to do, planning in advance.
Well, yeah. I mean, I just, again, there are things that I've got to do that I don't want to do.
Right. We all do.
So I just, you know, that's important to me. Like, for example, there are a couple things that we've got scheduled for this summer that I really love that we're doing them. Like, we do these A-lister trainings in public speaking for people who are already at the very high level of the circuit. So we do the big event each year for the general public. And then we do these specialized events for what we call A-listers, people making 15, 20, 30, 50 grand a speech. And we've got one planned in June. And I really want to work with those folks. I'm pumped about it. I love doing that work. I'm like, it's freaking June, you know? It's like right in the middle of the week. That week, we could be just out cruising on the boat. So people say to me, you know, we remember when the Powerball was like $1.5 billion?
Yes.
And you don't buy the Powerball when it's $1.5 billion because you expect to win. You buy it for the fantasy of winning. So you spend $3. Like, we spent a couple bucks. We actually won $8, by the way. I mean, it cost me $30 to win $8, but we bought $30 in tickets just because it was a fun fantasy to talk about, well, what would we do with the money? And someone said to me, there's no way you could retire. And I said, you are absolutely dead wrong. I could retire tomorrow because there's a million different things that I'm interested in that I could pursue with urgency that I would love doing. And sure, I would still maybe do some of what I'm doing now, but I could retire tomorrow, no problem.
Hmm. Also, since that was like just less than 2 weeks ago, you probably would have canceled this interview with me.
Not with you.
If you were worth $1.5 billion, right? I would be really upset if you were spending this time with me.
Well, here's the thing. There was a woman who, one of the women who won, I think there were three big winners, One of the women who won got her ticket from her boss, who bought $30,000 worth of tickets for his employees.
Whoa.
Which is just mind-boggling. I mean, I can't think of anything cooler. You know, like the Inc. 500 or the, you know, J.D. Powers and Associate, like best places to work lists. Mm-hmm. Definitely, he's got to make number one this year. There's no way, two ways about it. He's got to be number one. But my question was, is she coming back to work tomorrow?
No, she's not.
Is she coming back to work after he bought her a ticket that made her hundreds of millions of dollars? That's what I want to know.
If she does, she's coming to buy the company.
That's right. That's exactly right. That's funny.
Well, Michael, this has been an absolute blast. I do want to wrap up on one final question for you. So this talk of retirement, this talk of planning for retirement and setting goals and sort of planning your years out in advance. This thing that I find sometimes as entrepreneurs, as dreamers that we are, we tend to always project our success into the future, right? And like the horizon, when you try and walk towards it, it always gets further away. So you set a goal of revenue or standing on a certain stage or writing another bestseller, and you project that 3 months into the future. But when you are almost there, you send out 5 or 10 loftier goals. And sometimes we end up living in this gap where we never see ourselves as successful no matter what we achieve. Mm-hmm. I would love it right now, Michael, if you could stop, look behind you at everything you've come through, what you've learned, the highs, the lows, the wins, and the losses, and tell me how you feel about your career up until today.
I do feel good about it. I feel that I've built something with my own two hands, so to speak, that is original and unique and not particularly easy. So I feel very good about that. I also feel that I have a failed $50 million company. Meaning, from one person's perspective, we do very well. And, you know, the company is growing consistently each year. But I could also look at what we've done over the last 13 years and say, you know what? This company really should be a $50 million company. There's no reason that it shouldn't. It has all of the right elements. But because of the choices I've made, it's not. So, you know, on one hand, I'm very proud of what I've been able to accomplish. On the other hand, I also see that my particular personality has gotten in the way of us reaching some more significant goals. And, you know, it's not even right. It's not even say more significant goals. It's that it's reaching its full potential. I mean, maybe someone could say, oh, it's a $500 million, you know, like Tony Robbins makes a gazillion dollars. I don't know how much he makes. But, but you know, I don't have the need for that, but I do know that I would like to be able to express what's possible for me. Like I'd like to go out knowing that I was able to produce what I was capable of, that I actually touched on my potential. And so I see it from both sides of that coin.
So beautifully said. And it's true. I mean, if you hit the 50 million, it would be then the 500 million. And if once it's the five, so there is that tendency, but I love the idea of just wanting to reach your full potential, whatever that is personally for you.
Yeah.
It's true. Looking back, I don't think you want to regret missing that.
Yeah. I don't want to ever look back and go like, I was lazy there. Or I should have, you know.
Or what could have happened if I would have pushed that further?
Yeah. Or if, you know, it's not in working harder. It's not that. It's, you know, what if I had gotten over my, you know, chip on my shoulder about that thing? Or what if I had, you know, not let that particular fear get in my way? You know, those are the kind of things that I don't want that to be what I remember when I go. I want to feel like, you know what? I fought the good fight. Cause it's not really, you know, life is, I've got no meaning of it. Meaning like I've got no answer for the meaning of life for everybody, but it's not always a very easy thing for most of us. And it's just interesting because, you know, on one hand you think, well, I could just decide that everything's going to be easy and I'm just going to take everything like it's super easy. But I don't know. I don't seem to be able to do that. Like just everything like, no, it's no problem. I'm happy to sit on hold with Bank of America for the next 5 hours. No problem. You know, when they come on, they say, thank you for your patience. Go, what do you mean? What patience? What do you mean? Thank you for your patience. They always say that. I go, I have no patience. How could you thank me for it? So I guess what I'm saying is that it's important to do what I can to get over any of the things that I put in my own way.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. All right, Michael, in passing, we have got to talk about your business, but I would love it if you could specifically tell the listener where they can find out more about your business and also where they could find you.
MichaelPort.com is a place that they can find me. So if they need me, MichaelPort.com. They can also just shoot an email to questions@MichaelPort.com. And from MichaelPort.com, you can get to all of our other properties, so to speak. So our two big properties are HeroicPublicSpeaking.com, HeroicPublicSpeaking.com, and BookYourselfSolid.com, BookYourselfSolid.com. So on the Book Yourself Solid side of the business, we have a mentoring program, very inexpensive, large community-based mentoring program. And then we also have a certification program where we license the intellectual property in Book Yourself Solid to other consultants to use, and we train them up on how to use it, of course. And then on the Heroic Public Speaking side of the business, we have this big event that we do in February. I don't know when this is coming out, so it's either listening either before or after. And that's heroicpublicspeaking.com/live. So we do these big events there, and then we do master classes and higher level trainings. And of course, I have great coaches who do personal coaching as well. So those are the two things that we do primarily.
Excellent. I will link to all this in the show notes. So when you stop driving, when you stop working out, whatever it is you're doing right now, you can track down MichaelPort.com, BookYourselfSolid.com, HeroicPublicSpeaking.com, and HeroicPublicSpeaking.com/live.
Oh, you know what? I forgot about something. I have a podcast that's, I think, really worthwhile to listen to. Nice. That's the thing. I also have to learn to get better at the promotion part. I'm not kidding.
Yeah.
Like I sometimes forget about it, even though I know exactly what you're supposed to do all the time, because I just keep thinking about what's relevant to the audience, what's relevant to the audience. But Steal the Show with Michael Port is my podcast, and it's quite popular, they tell me.
It is. Yeah. It is. It's a great show.
Thanks.
Strongly recommend it. So that's Steal the Show. I'll also link to that. Michael Port is on Twitter, and he's got 6 best-selling books on Amazon. I'll link to those as well for you. Check it all out. It's definitely worth it. Michael, please, again, thank you so much for taking the time to stop by. Thank you for the great conversation. And please just keep doing what you're doing, because it is awesome and inspiring to watch.
Thanks, man. Hey, I really appreciate it. I never take these opportunities for granted. So thank you.
Michael, thank you so much. I had a lot of fun. And yes, we went a little bit longer than we typically do, but I know that you out there listening got as much out of that conversation as I did. But I had to go back through the conversation, as we always do. I went through the conversation and I listened back to it. And there were some things that Michael said that really just stood out to me. There was 5 of them the first time. Then I got down to 3. Then there was 2. And then the last time, I just listened to it now, and there was this one thing that Michael said. That one thing. Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
You know, I wrote that original book for people who don't typically love marketing and selling, but I believe that there are certain people you're meant to serve and others that you're not. And your job is to do everything in your power to reach the people that you're meant to serve.
And that's the hack. Michael, I love this. I really, really, really do. There are certain people that you're meant to serve and others that you are not. Your job, my job, Michael's job, is to do everything in our power to reach those people. I've been going off about the power of learning to sell, right? And I think that if you have a hurdle, a mental barrier of not wanting to sell, not wanting to be a salesperson, this is it. There are certain people that you are meant to serve with the work you need to do and with what your business will create. And it is your job to make sure that everyone that is meant to be served by that business knows about it. And that is how you sell it, because you're helping them and they need to know what it is, because what you are providing is a benefit and will help there and make their life better and easier. And I love just the simplicity of this, that there's people that you're meant to serve, there's people that you aren't, and it's your job to find those people. Michael, thank you. Couldn't have been said any better. I love it. All right, this has been a blast. Thank you so much for sticking around. I really, truly, truly do appreciate it. Hacktheentrepreneur.com is the website. Go there. Please get on the email list. I think you will really dig it. We're having a lot of fun over there. And yeah, I don't know. It's been fun. But yeah, check out the site. Michael's episode is now up there. You can get the links if you missed any of those. Just find Michael Port. You can search for him on the site and you'll find him. Yeah. This has been a blast. I really, 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 truly appreciate you taking the time. And please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.